Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Welcome to Hollywood and Levine. I am Ken Levine, your podcast host. Thanks so much for being here. My guest this week is Katie Gerritsen. Now, it is very hard to become a director, and it is even tougher if you are a woman. And Katie Gerritsen has been a director for 20 years now. She's done, among everything else, 11 Frasiers. She's done The Odd Couple. She's done Fuller House, School of Rock, Two Broke Girls, Girlfriends, George Lopez, Reba, on and on and on. And we're going to talk about the challenges of being a woman director this week and next. It's a fun interview with Katie Gerritsen this week on Hollywood and Levine. Well, first of all, I'm going to ask you how you broke in. I mean, it's hard enough for any director to break in, much less a woman. So talk a little bit about your career, because you've had a long career before you broke in as a director.
That's very true. I was an Air Force brat, moved around most of my early life, grew up in Northern California, and decided I needed to get away for college. And so I moved down to Los Angeles and I went to USC. I wasn't in the film school. I was in Annenberg at USC. And I was going to be a lawyer. And I wanted to be a politician, of all god-awful things. And that's where my I was a poli-sci major in this pre-law cluster. But my college job, I was a tour guide at Universal Studios.
What a fun job that must have been.
I'm telling you, it was my Camelot. I am still great friends with so many old tour guides. In fact, today I'm having a Zoom happy hour with five of the girls I was tour guides with. So we've all known each other since we were 18 years old. And, you know, when you were at my wedding, I must have had 50 tour guides at the wedding. So
yeah, no one showed me to my seat, though.
What? Oh, stop it.
You know, when I was working at Universal, if I would be directing or writing on a show and I'd be walking along and one of those trams would go by, I would always wave and go, washed up writer, right here, take a photo.
It might have been me on that tram, happily pointing you out to the tourists. So I was a tour guide at Universal and I kind of became enamored with showbiz, and everybody I was working with and hanging out with, they all wanted to be, well, most of them wanted to be actors. And some of them did. I was a tour guide with Jack Wagner. Remember him?
Yeah.
And
soap operas?
Yeah. There are a lot of people now in the business that were tour guides back in the day. So I was there for all through college, and I ended up evaluating tours and training new tour guides. And when we were rewriting the tour guide manual, the script, I would go down to the sets and be the liaison between what was filming on the back lot and what we were talking about on the tour, so we could always talk about the shows that Universal wanted to publicize. And so I was down on Joel Silver was remarkably, because I don't think he's like this with everybody. He was just wonderful with me. And he was shooting a movie called Streets of Fire. That's one of the shows I went to visit. And he would take me to the looping sessions, and I was a VIP on set. He even had me be an extra on set. And when Walter Hill was shooting Weird Science, I went down, and because I was a journalism major at USC, I decided to write about showbiz. So I profiled Walter Hill and wrote about his assistant directors. And, you know, that whole dream of being a lawyer and a politician kind of went by the wayside. I got sucked into showbiz, as they say.
And Weird Science versus a weird courtroom.
Yeah.
I can see why you made that decision.
Who knows about the road not traveled. But right out of college, you know, how is somebody who is an Air Force brat, not from Hollywood? I have no family in Hollywood. I have, you know, only friends who want to work in Hollywood. So how do I get in? Somebody told me about this test that I could take. And I was a really good test taker. And it was the Directors Guild Assistant Directors Training Program test to be a DGA trainee. You've probably seen those credits on movies and TV shows, DGA mm-hmm. trainees. And it's a two-year program where the Directors Guild assigns you to different projects so you can get connections. And after you earn your 400 days as a trainee, you're automatically in the Directors Guild as an assistant director member. So I took that test. I got in and spent 2 years as a trainee. And then I became an assistant director. And I worked on mostly movies and TV movies as an AD. I did Star Trek movies. I did a Sylvester Stallone movie. I worked with Blake Edwards, Ridley Scott. I had a great career going as an assistant director. But then I think it was right after Star Trek VI, the last one with all the original cast members. Being an AD is a really tough job. And there's a high rate of burnout. I mean, you're working 14, 16 hours a day. You're, you know, it's one of the reasons I don't remember my 20s. But, you know, I was traveling all over the place for different productions. And I got a call to do a little show called Frasier.
That's where I met you.
Yes, it is. And the first few years of Frasier, I wasn't ready to give up that single camera lifestyle. And I'm sure you've talked on your pod about differences between single and multi-camera. But it is a completely different ballgame the way these shows are shot. And on Frasier, you know, I got to go to work and at the same place in the same city every day. I got to laugh when I got to work. I got to hear people playing that beautiful piano in the living room and go to big parties. And I'm, you know, I slowly segued out of doing single cam into multicam, into sitcoms. I just really love the format. I love the audience, the theatrical aspect of all of it. And speaking of theater, Frasier, as you know, would hire a lot of theater directors to direct the show.
Right, Scott Ellis and Jerry Zaks.
Jerry Zaks, yes. And a lot of them had never worked with cameras before. So I worked really closely with a lot of the directors, as did our camera coordinator, Jim Rose. And I was really interested in the process. And if I was to say, if someone asked me who my mentors were, I would say, obviously, all the directors I worked with as an AD, because I would watch and I would learn, and I really had the benefit of working with some of the best directors in the business.
So Andy I was Ackerman. A mentor for one week?
You were a mentor for, we worked together more than that, I think.
Well, I only directed one while you were the first AD.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
God, I feel like you directed a
bunch
then
you,
of them.
Then you moved on and you became... Wait,
I slowly segued out. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Jimmy Burrows, he, you know, to be able to watch him work and try to absorb as much as possible. But David Lee was probably who I would say was my mentor more than any other.
Mine
and it was
too.
Such a pleasure. Yeah, it was such a pleasure listening to him on your podcast, hearing his voice. I haven't spoken to him in a while. And he was one of my favorite directors to observe, because he also is such a brilliant writer, and he really concentrated on the story and on all the little subtleties. And I think because he was the creator of the show and executive producer, he could really bring more than I think a lot of the other directors were afraid to bring, maybe, as guest directors, because he was part of the original family and he had that level of respect with the actors. And it was just a joy to watch him. And he knew that I was trying to absorb everything. And he would have me over to his house and show me how he blocked cameras. He had the blueprints out. He had little cutouts of the cameras and the actors. And he went move by move and used different colored pencils. Because, you know, when you're directing multi-camera, you're doing... You know, and on Frasier, we had long scenes. It wasn't like Seinfeld that had two-page scenes that were relatively easy to shoot. 10, 15-page scenes on Frasier, it's a lot of shooting.
Yeah, and it is. You have five, six characters in a scene, mm-hmm. and four cameras, and they're all moving around, and you need masters and singles and reaction shots and two shots.
Yep.
And
yep.
it's all happening simultaneously. Mm-hmm. Yep. It's like a Rubik's Cube. You really have to learn that.
It's like a puzzle, but I love putting together puzzles. I do a Sudoku every morning just to get my brain going. And I've always said to people who've shadowed me and I teach a class on directing at USC and we go over multicam, and I said, listen, it's not the shots that are difficult in multicam. It's the transitions from shot to shot, because you cannot stop rolling. You're doing the whole scene. So this camera will have the two shot across the room, and then on this line cue, they have to swing over and get the single of this guy on the other side of the room. And it's figuring out, you know, you've got to learn to kind of edit in your head. And I used to watch Jim Burrows look at the quad split, the monitors that had all four cameras were seeing. And he would take a pencil and point to each quad split, editing the show as we watched all four cameras at once. And we could see how it was going to piece together and on what lines he was going to cut from camera to camera when it got to post. And that was invaluable. It's tough to learn that, though, because there's so much going on in a scene with all the actors and with four cameras and watching four monitors and making sure you actually can take in everything and your brain can absorb everything.
But, and here's the thing, too, is that you prepare, like you said, you'd be sitting with David Lee mm-hmm. and you would be with your little men and your little cameras. And I used to do the same thing too. And you go, okay, so when Kelsey crosses around the couch, then I'll have A camera pick up this and mm-hmm. X will get him. And then this guy will move over and keep them both. And, you know, and you have it all prepared, and then you get down there. And the camera coordinator will go, you know, it'd be a lot better if you had a single of him on C camera.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you go, okay. And if you put him on C camera, and then the rest of your plan
doesn't
goes
work.
Out the window.
It falls apart. And that happens all the time, especially mm-hmm. when you're newer. And it's hard because you're doing your cameras a lot of times at home. In a sitcom, it didn't happen so much on Frasier, but on other shows, there would be a lot of rewrites. And so if the show shot on Fridays, but we had to block all the cameras out on Thursdays, sometimes after the Wednesday run through, they would say, you know what, the script isn't working. We're just going to give you a whole new script, or half the script would be new. And you'd come in on Thursday, never even having seen a rehearsal. So for things like that, and even when you have seen the rehearsal and you work it out perfectly, when I set my cameras, I know it's just a starting point. It's a mm-hmm. blueprint. And you really do work together with the cameras, with the crew. Sometimes the camera operators will have great ideas on beautiful shots. They want to showcase their wares too. And it's, you know, so my my shot list is kind of a blueprint. And then when you get out there with everybody, then you put it together and ideally you make it work.
Yeah. It always does. I mean, it took me a number of episodes. And I remember I was doing my own show, Almost Perfect,
Mm-hmm.
And
I love that show, by the way.
Oh, thank you. And got a call on Sunday night. Our camera blocking was on Mondays because we shot on Tuesday nights. And I got a call Sunday night that our director was passing a kidney stone.
Oh, no.
And wasn't going to be there. So I said, all right, well, then I'll come in and camera block. And so I came in Monday morning without having seen how he blocked the show.
Oh,
and
no.
And I just had to do it on the fly. And the fact that I was able to said, okay, I'm ready.
Didn't that feel good?
Yeah. Yeah, it did. Sunday night did not feel good. did not
I know
get
that
much
feeling.
Sleep.
But, I know that feeling. It's awful. It's
you know,
awful.
I talked to a director who had done both and mm-hmm. also features. And he said, I can take a multi-camera director and I can teach him how to be a single camera director in 20 minutes.
Yep.
He says, if I take a single camera director and try to teach him how to do multi-camera, he may never get it.
That's so true. So true. And having been an AD and seen that happen, it's multicam is a whole other ballgame. And it's really hard to teach single camera directors how to do it because you are shooting, you know, mostly proscenium style. You can't cross the line. You've got four cameras shooting at once. I remember when I was an AD on a Blake Edwards movie. And for some reason, he wanted to do a sitcom. And after we finished that, he actually did do a sitcom. It never went past the pilot, but because it was a disaster, and Blake Edwards is a genius, but he got down to the set and he never could really grasp how to do it properly within the time constraints. And it just didn't work. So I completely agree with you on that.
And eventually too, you start learning how to block the show mm-hmm. with your cameras in mind.
Oh, you do.
Know, you know not
do.
To not to put somebody in a spot where it's going to be hard to shoot them or put
yeah.
somebody in a spot where you're only going to be able to get a profile.
Right. And thinking of the frame lines and knowing you can't put a person here because that camera's going to be off the set and when you're shooting 16:9. That, oh God, the old days when we had to cover for the square TV sets and the rectangle TV
yeah.
screens,
mm-hmm.
that was horrible. It made for very ugly pictures, but now
in
now
some
it's,
cases, yes. Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to say that David Lee was the one who did give me my first episode to direct, and I am eternally grateful for him. I always said, if I ever get up there and win an award for directing, he's going to be the first person I thank. So David, know that I still have that in mind if that ever happens. And he came to me at the end of fourth or fifth season and said, I get the feeling, and this is after he'd been teaching me stuff, that you might want to direct. And so I never really had, I had this whole thing, I have a journal where I was going to approach Angel Casey Lee, David Angel, Peter Casey, and David Lee at the end of that season to get an episode to direct. And David Lee beat me to the punch, for which I'm also eternally grateful. And then I got nominated for my first episode, and both of my guest stars got nominated for Emmys. And so...
Which was it?
It was Dr. Nora. With Christine Baranski and Piper Laurie.
Oh.
Side note, funny story about Dr. Nora. It's probably the least seen episode in all of Frasier.
Why?
Because when it aired, so it aired once in prime time. I had a big party and the rerun and residuals and that type of process because I was a new director. And then it never aired again. Come to find out, and I have to thank the Gay and Lesbian Association, GLAAD, because they uncovered that because Paramount was creating a show with Dr. Laura Schlesinger, and it was my episode was a parody of Dr. Nora, where Christine Baranski was a parody of her.
Right.
They pulled it out of syndication.
Wow.
So. Yeah, for like 2 years. So it never got an additional primetime run. There was a big article in the LA Times about it that GLAAD covers that Paramount is pulling episodes of, you know, their hit show so as not to offend Dr. Laura. And Carrie McCluggage, who was president of the studio at that time, actually came down to set to apologize to me. And it was, but it was a shame. It was an excellent episode. Joe Keenan wrote it. He was nominated for a WGA award. I was nominated for a DGA award. Both of the guest stars got Emmy nominations. It was a wonderful episode, and they had pulled it out of syndication. So to appease their show host, Dr. Laura.
And, well, but you they know, did, there's,
they put it back in. So it's
there's more to that
now.
Story in the sense that if they pull it, mm-hmm. that costs you money.
It cost me a lot of money because mm-hmm. primetime residuals are, you know, 10 times as much as what you get when it goes into syndication.
Right.
And so I never got residual run. And Frasier had been, the deal was that they would have three primetime episodes of each primetime airings of each episode. So I missed out on the second two, which, yeah, was a lot of money.
That
but
is
I
a
didn't
lot of
know.
Money. Yeah. Yeah, but it launched your career, so,
it did.
So there's
it did.
That. How it about did, dealing with actors?
Oh, it's so funny. It's one of my favorite things. I love the rehearsal process, and it's one of the biggest challenges, I think, coming from the assistant director position, because it's considered more of a managerial technical position as opposed to the creative position. So the big comment you hear is, but can she talk to actors? Everybody assumes I'm great at the cameras and that the other side of directing, working with the actors, would be a challenge. And it's one of my favorite things. And I remember one of my favorite moments in showbiz is because of this wonderful theater actress who and movie and TV actress who I know you know, Christine Ebersole, mm-hmm. who I just think is a goddess. I was directing her in an episode of a show, and I was the first female director in three seasons that they'd ever had. And it was this big deal. It was like a boys club over there. And it was two former Frasier writers, F.J. Pratt and Dan Cohen, who called me in. And they said, you know, we're having our first female director. And, you know, we're very nervous about it, but we think you can do it. As though it's something that women couldn't do. As though... It's just the stuff I've heard. But anyway, the episode went great. They had already asked me back for like the next season, another story of my life, and told me they wanted to meet me to be the house director. And then the head of the network changes over and they cancel the whole slate. So my episode ended up being the series finale. But during that episode, Christine Ebersole pulled me aside, one of my favorite moments, and she says, "Oh, it is just so nice to finally work with an actor's director." Oh my God, that she would say that to me. It was like, this is what I've wanted to hear, that somebody actually recognizes. And since then, I've actually, that's been a comment that I've received. And it brings me a lot of joy. I just think, and I don't know whether it has anything to do with me being a woman, but I love to think about the scenes. I love to think about what the actors would be thinking in those moments and the storytelling aspect of it. It's one of the joys of my job.
So what are some of the unique challenges that you face?
As a woman? It's important to realize that things are different now than they were over 20 years ago when I started directing, but we have a long way to go. And I'm sure a lot of it is still the same, but back then there were very few female directors and there were one or two that were held up as, you know, the queens, then, well, they can do it. And so they were the examples and that, as long as they were working, I guess the industry felt fine. And so there weren't a lot of new women being brought into the mix. I can't tell you how many times I've been on meetings where they say, we had a female director and it didn't work out, as though we're all the same.
Right.
So the next guy you get and he doesn't work out, where are you going to go next? A monkey?
We had a left-handed director and that didn't work out. Yeah.
But I think the challenges for being a woman are the same challenges that any man would have going into a show, but they're magnified. We look and we sound different. You know, we have boobs, you know, only a few of the men directors I've, you know, worked with ever had boobs. And so we just look different out there. I have to think about what I wear, how I'm presenting myself. Are they going to think I'm too much of a girly girl? Because I am. And I think that my best experiences are when I felt most confident about myself as a person. And when I let those insecurities get the better of me is when I'm not at my best. But women are assumed to be right or wrong, I think, less funny than men, especially if a woman is maybe slightly attractive. I think we're tested and second-guessed and talked over, disregarded, perhaps a little bit more than men would be. I know I've experienced that. I don't think I'm ever really disregarded, but the talking over, the second-guessing. And if you're firm and you know what you want, then if that means that a man didn't get what he wants, then you're difficult or you're not a team player and you risk alienating some guy who has his opinion. And a lot of times I've had a lot of great experiences. The positions on set that are not always supportive, strangely, are the ADs and the camera coordinators, because a lot of times they also want to direct.
Right. I was going to say, they're resentful.
Yeah, that I took it. I actually had a camera coordinator say to me not long ago, when I've got years of experience, tell me, well, they wanted me to do it, but the network wanted a woman. It's like, well, what a thing to say to somebody that's coming in to direct your show. And so, I don't know. It's a fine line you have to walk, and it saddens me that I'm still often the token female director. I did a show last season, my favorite show that I ever directed. It got canceled, but it was about two sisters, mostly. Yeah. Oh, I love that show so much. Alex Hirschlag and the whole cast. It was just a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful experience. And I was so looking forward to going back. We were all devastated that it didn't get picked up. But, you know, there were 13 episodes that were shot, and two of them went to a woman, and I got those two. And I'm super grateful that I got those two. But why there was only one woman director on that show? I can't tell you. I should go back in my credits and list how many times I was the only female director on a show. And that just saddens me, as though we're just filling a quota and not really being there as valuable contributors to the storytelling and to the process. And I think the shows only benefit when you have diversity, whether it's people of color, whether it's women behind the camera, because we may look at stories a different way. We may see things that the guys don't see. We have a different outlook. We have, there are other things that are brought to the show when you do have people that represent different backgrounds and different stories and a different segment of the audience. The stories aren't all told from one point of view. So, and I think that plays into casting and wardrobe and every element of the show. When you have men that are making all those decisions, it's from the male point of view, what they think the audiences want to see. And half the audience are women, and a substantial amount are people of color. And so if you want to broaden your audience, I think it's to the show's benefit to really make them more inclusive.
Okay, that's part one of my two-parter with Katie Gerritsen. Part two, next week, we'll delve into directing again, and also we'll talk about the show that I so hated Two Broke Girls. She was a director on that show. It's a lively discussion. Anyway, that is next week. Our thanks, as always, to Adam and Susie Meister-Butler, to Howard Hoffman, John Wolfert, Bruce and Jason Miller. If you want to subscribe, please do. If you want to get in touch with me, my email address is HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. That's HollywoodLevine@Outlook.com. I'm on Instagram, Hollywood and Levine, also on Twitter, @KenLevine. Part two with Katie Garrison coming up next week. Stay safe. Talk to you then. Hollywood and Levine.